Agents is prompting Congress to look into enforcement practices. Andrew Free with the hashtag Detention Kills Project says he found hundreds of people died in custody over the last decade and a half, with their deaths remaining hidden.
What I fear is there are people who are dying in state or local custody whose deaths are never being reported publicly. What is the true number of people dying in ICE custody? I don't actually know, and I don't think anybody does.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
I'm Scott Baba for Pacifica Radio.
Support for WPFW comes in part from Friends of the Congo, a 501c3 entity who will be hosting Love Sound, an evening of soul sisters in support of WPFW and the Friends of the Congo's DRC Women, Peace, and Security Center in Kinshasa. This event will take place on Sunday, November 2nd, from 5 to 8 p.m. at Westminster Presbyterian Church at 400 I Street Southwest. Performers include Free Benjamin, Wena, Anna Mwalago, Ayana Gregory, and more. More information on this event is available at WPFWFM.org.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of Africa Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Channel in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in occupied Washington, in Distrito Colombia, here on this Friday, October 24th, 2025. And we are also in the middle of WPFW's Fall Pledge Drive at this time, which gives you the opportunity to support the Latino Media Collective right now by going to WPFWFM.org to make a donation. You can also call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. And if you have the Cash App on your phone, make a donation to $WPFWFM and please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. The goal at this hour is $600. Every little bit counts in small amounts, and your donations is so important right now to support independent media outlets like WPFW's in these trying times as we continue to see further media consolidation throughout the entire country. So once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on Puerto Rico to discuss the parallels between Puerto Rico's colonial status with the United States and that of Palestine, and the long history as well of Puerto Rican and Afro-descendant solidarity. And so with us back on the show again today is James Early, who's a former Smithsonian Institution Assistant Secretary for Education and Public Service. It's such a thrill. Welcome back to the show, James Early.
Good to be back. Thank you.
Absolutely. Also back on the show is Alberto Medina, who's a Puerto Rican-born, U.S.-based writer, editor, and advocate for Puerto Rican independence. He is also the president of Boricuas Unidos en la Diaspora, and he also has his own Substack page, which I didn't mention last time on the show, that's going to be central to some of the things that we'll be discussing. So, Alberto Medina, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Oscar. Always great to be with you and James and your audience.
Absolutely. So, Alberto, you were recently here in Washington, D.C. for a general policy briefing on Puerto Rico's colonial status. And let's underline that, colonial status. Can you give us some more details on the hearing, as well as a few highlights from it, if you will?
Yeah, you know, this is part of the work I do with my organization, Boricuas Unidos en la Diaspora, as you mentioned, or BUDPR, as we lovingly call it. You know, we're an advocacy organization. We're an educational organization. We try to bring conversations about Puerto Rico status to places where you usually don't hear them, which in the case of the United States is most places, right? Because Puerto Rico is still critically, you know, under-discussed, not really talked about. The media doesn't really cover it. And that's certainly the case, you know, in Washington, D.C., and in Congress, and the halls of power, where, you know, unless there's a major crisis happening, like after Hurricane Maria, for example, there really isn't that much conversation about Puerto Rico's colonial status. And, you know, the reality is that Puerto Rico is always in crisis, even when it isn't being talked about. It's certainly in crisis right now. You know, I always like to say that Puerto Rico is just an incredibly vulnerable and precarious place, just at a baseline because of its colonial status. But right now it's suffering through all of the trials and tribulations, you know, imposed by the Trump administration, with the added insult to that injury that nobody in Puerto Rico voted for Donald Trump because nobody in Puerto Rico can vote for the president of the United States, right? So for us, it's a really urgent moment with Puerto Rico going through all of its crises. I mean, as we speak right now, there are tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people in Puerto Rico without water because they're without power. So the water, you know, stations aren't pumping. These are things that are happening every day in Puerto Rico. And I and our organization see the colonial status as the disease behind all of these symptoms. So we had the opportunity to do a briefing in Washington, D.C. to specifically, you know, shine a light on Puerto Rican sovereignty as what we see as the just and viable solution to Puerto Rico's colonial status. We certainly know that the status quo can't be a solution. It's, you know, continues to make everything worse besides being colonial, as you said. And statehood isn't a solution. You know, it's certain that's something that certainly people in Washington, D.C. aren't talking about. And as I think we discussed last time, you know, I think fairly easy to see why that's not going to happen in a country that, you know, rejects Latinos and is doing so many other things to our communities. So we put together a panel of experts to talk about Puerto Rican sovereignty, you know, in the belly of the beast and in las entrañas del monstruo in Washington, D.C. So we had a fantastic panel with Juan Dalmau, who's the leader of the Puerto Rican Independence Party, Dr. Jose Caraballo Cueto, an economist in Puerto Rico who has done maybe the most comprehensive study in recent times about the economic consequences of various status options for Puerto Rico, and Renata Beca Barragan, who is the legislative director for Congresswoman Nidia Velázquez in New York, a Puerto Rican congresswoman and someone who, you know, has been a big champion of the island and has really been at the center of, you know, recent legislative efforts to change Puerto Rico's status. And it was a fantastic conversation. You know, it was standing room only. We had over 120 people there, I would say. And, you know, I think some of the highlights, one, again, just the urgency of this issue and the fact that it is the rot at the heart of so much that is wrong in Puerto Rico. Certainly from, you know, Juan Dalmau's perspective as the leader of the Independence Party, highlighted the growth of the independence movement in Puerto Rico, the fact that something that, you know, was once a hyper-minority option now has tremendous, you know, support as of last year's plebiscite. And, you know, he came in second in last year's election in a four-way race. You know, from the perspective of economist Jose Caraballo Cueto, we really wanted to have him on there Because really, you know, the big question that people often have about the potential for Puerto Rican independence is this feasible economically for Puerto Rico? Can Puerto Rico sustain itself as a sovereign nation? And we asked him that question point blank, and his answer was a resounding yes. Now, does that mean it's easy? Does that mean, you know, it's going to happen automatically? Of course not. There's going to be a lot of work to do, you know, in an independent Puerto Rico after 127 years of colonialism to ensure that, you know, our nation can thrive. But this idea that it's simply an impossibility, that Puerto Rico is too weak and vulnerable to ever be independent, is simply not true. His research, you know, shows that. And I think that was a really, really valuable perspective to bring to this conversation. And finally, from Renata, from Congresswoman Velasquez's office, just the need to continue to have these conversations. You know, she's in Congress. She is someone who is trying to center Puerto Rico, and the Congresswoman always trying to center Puerto Rico among the many, many other crises and priorities, you know, happening in the country that members of Congress have to deal with. So we need to continue to do this work, talking about Puerto Rico in Congress, out of Congress, in communities. So we were very honored and lucky to be able to do that with this event. And it's what our organization will continue to do.
And this goes on top of the disturbing fact that there is growing militarization on the island, especially under this current administration. A lot of people don't know this, but there is a presence of ICE in Puerto Rico as well. We did a show on this earlier this year, so I would encourage everyone to check that out as well. And this over-militarization of Puerto Rico is even more concerning considering what's going on further south of the Caribbean in places like Venezuela. So that's another conversation in and of itself, but it's worth mentioning during this conversation. Now, Alberto, last August, you wrote a scathing article on your Substack page regarding Puerto Rican lawmakers who have supported Israel or have received money from AIPAC. One name in particular who recently made headlines about this was New York Representative Richie Torres, following, I would say, a tense and shameful interview with comedian Adam Friedland. So I have the clip here, so let's take a listen.
Hamas murdered thousands of people.
So what does that mean?
That Hamas is a terrorist organization for murdering innocent children and civilians.
How many civilians have been killed in this war?
The war is a tragedy, but again, you're suggesting they've killed
journalists.
People have been killed in a war. It's been a tragedy.
They've killed people waiting for aid.
But you're suggesting that it is the policy of the Israeli government to murder civilians, and that is a notion that I reject.
You gotta be like a human being about this.
People who are dying in the war, which to me is a tragedy, because war is a tragedy.
Do you feel in your heart that this is what you're doing? What you're saying is right?
If you remove Hamas...
You don't actually think that.
I told you what I believe. Don't tell me what I believe. I've told you what I believe.
Why would you believe that? No,
because there are people who see the world differently. I know it's a shock to you,
no.
But there are people who see the world differently from you.
So again, that was an interview that comedian Adam Friedland did with New York Representative Richie Torres. And as I said before, it was rather tense and shameful on the part of Richie Torres. And that was just one clip right there of this whole hour-long, I would say, disgraceful, you know, interaction between Friedland and Torres, more so Torres, obviously. So I bring this up because also at the center of this article was the parallels between Puerto Rico and Palestine, as you mentioned in your article. While you admit that such comparisons has its limitations, can you tell us about both those parallels and sort of the irony, especially with that clip right there, the irony of Puerto Rican lawmakers, not just Richie Torres, supporting Israel's genocide in Gaza? Because that's essentially what we just heard there from Richie Torres.
Yeah, and you know, in a way, it's ironic, right, just because of what we might expect from Puerto Ricans and from other oppressed people. But of course, you know, and this is at the heart of it, some people believe that Puerto Ricans aren't depressed at all, that they think the current status is fine, or even that the United States, you know, has been doing a great service to the people of Puerto Rico. So if you believe that, why wouldn't you, you know, believe that Puerto Rico would be better off with who I see? And I think the facts prove is Puerto Rico's oppressor, right? You would want more of that relationship instead of less of it. And I really think that is what at the heart of someone like Torres's views, whether it's on Israel-Palestine or on Puerto Rico's political status. And it's frankly siding with power, right? And not really being concerned about the powerless, but putting yourself on the side of the powerful. And it's, you know, it's an old story and a common tale, and certainly something that we see in many other contexts. It is, you know, offensive in a way to hear and ashamed to hear from someone that you would want to have representing your community. But as I said in my piece, you know, I think obviously the differences are there, and you know, the extraordinary violence that the Palestinian people have been subjected to, not just in the last couple of years, really has no recent comparison in Puerto Rico. But at the same time, in terms of the colonial nature of the relationship, you know, Palestine and Gaza have been described as open air colonies. And what I think is really telling too is that this isn't just a comparison that, you know, those of us on the side of Puerto Ricans and Palestinians have made, but even Israelis have pointed to Puerto Rico as a model, a political model that they could try to impose on specifically the West Bank. And I cited this in my piece, but there was an op-ed a couple of years ago in the Times of Israel that proposed what they called the Puerto Rico model that Israel could assign to the West Bank. And this is what they see as what the Puerto Rico model would mean. Israel would hold absolute sovereignty over all the territory. That is the case with Puerto Rico. The U.S. holds full sovereignty over Puerto Rico. Palestinians would have civil and human rights under Israel's basic law and human dignity. Oh, and without the collective right to self-determination, i.e. Palestinians will not vote in national elections. So again, as with Puerto Rico and the United States, they get to decide which parts of the Constitution do and don't apply to Puerto Ricans. They get to decide which political rights we do and don't have. Again, quoting from the Times of Israel piece, Palestinians would be free to enact their own governing documents as long as they are consistent with those of Israel. This is exactly what the United States did with Puerto Rico. It allowed Puerto Ricans to draft a constitution, but Congress had to approve that constitution. It actually got to edit it to take things out of it, right? So it seems like they're giving you some, you know, sort of basic self-government and self-determination. But at the end of the day, you know, Israel or the United States or Israel in this case would continue to hold the full, you know, the full right over the people. Palestinians will not pay Israeli income taxes, but would be taxed to support their local needs. Again, exactly the same as with Puerto Rico. Puerto Ricans don't pay federal income tax. You know, they do pay Social Security taxes, pay Medicare taxes, et cetera, because they get those services. So the parallels are really striking. And I think the fact that, you know, you have Israelis proposing, you know, this as an evolution of the colonial model, right, that they would want to impose on Palestinians is telling. And it's also telling to have leaders like Congressman Richie Torres basically endorsing this, right? As I said, putting themselves on the side of the colonizer, on the side of the powerful, out of, I think, a belief that some people get to have the full rights of sovereignty and of self-government, and some people just kind of have to make do with whatever the powerful will allow them to have. So, you know, it's a shame. Again, as I said, I feel ashamed as a Puerto Rican that one of my people would hold these views, but it's not surprising, unfortunately.
James, I want to get your thoughts on the parallels that Alberto proposed here. And I just want to say here, it sort of segues into our last conversation between DC statehood and Puerto Rican independence. And I will also say that, you know, there's a little bit of gentrification, you know, when describing the Puerto Ricanization of Palestine under the eyes of this article that Alberto cited.
Well, I'm in total agreement with Alberto. I mean, the very fact that the Puerto Rican model, that this singular colonial relationship with the United States is now being raised as a kind of universal, or among the universal models of statecraft exploitation, is something that has, I think, deeper resonances on two levels I want to speak to. One is, I come from the generation older than the two of you of this notion of people of color somehow being an objective response to the racialized exploitation expression, whether it's national oppression within the United States or whether it's colonial expression with regard to Black and brown people. We have emerged in our individual strivings to now not just want to align ourselves with power, but actually to want to become the power. So that Richie Torres is part of a Democratic Party ineffective and backward retrograde leadership, including Jeffries, who is head of the Democratic Party, who is also not just a buy-in with AIPAC, but who supports the racialized, the apartheid occupation and ethnic cleansing and de facto the genocide going on there by continuously advocating in defense of Israel over the Palestinians and continuing to fund that and to militarily execute those principles. We see it in Meeks, Congressman Meeks in New York City, where Torres is, who is head of foreign relations on the minority side of the Democratic Party, also supporting that. So that the people of color issue, I think we now, I'm not embarrassed by Meeks, and I would urge us not to be embarrassed by Torres, because the striving for individual rights has allowed some of our racial and ethnic or cultural groups to emerge to not just having affinity with the powerful, but wanting to become a part of the powerful. For example, I think we have to recall that under President Barack Obama, while that was a major anti-racist stride in an accomplishment for a non-white person, particularly for a Black person, given the history of slavery as a foundational element of the Republic of the United States emerging to be the president, he bailed out capital all around the globe, and African Americans lost half of our wealth. And so that the pride issue turned the pride issue to the embarrassment issue. There is a historical basis for those emotions, but when it gets down where rubber meets the road, I think we have to be a lot more steely-eyed. One of the other parallels, I think, with regard to Puerto Rico and the ethnic cleansing, aside from the genocide, but the historic push out and not allowing people back in, there's been an economic cleansing, if you will, in Puerto Rico, of the economic push out of having more Puerto Ricans living outside of the colony for now decades than living inside. And that will continue with the investment of U.S. capital. I was listening to a podcast today where there is a discussion of moving some industry there that will make military equipment. The last one I'd like to make on this at the moment is, in the case of Torres or some of the cases I've mentioned with regard to African Americans, we are now seeing a clearer intersection between domestic or national politics or Puerto Rican colonial politics and the international arena. So that Puerto Rico has a Cuban-born Puerto Rican Republican MAGA governor who is welcoming the F-35s into Vieques as a launching pad for the invasion of Venezuela, which will send the whole region into conflagration, including Colombia. Colombia will not be excluded. Trump is already now attacking Colombia, where there are 8 or 9 military bases that the U.S. controls inside Colombia, just across the border. But Puerto Rico is the strategic launching pad. So it is a remilitarization of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has always been militarized as a threat in the region. That will also open up the whole Caribbean, because Puerto Rico culturally and geographically is a Caribbean country by its language and its emotion and its sentiments, even among the right wing, their tastes, their aesthetics, their symbolism emerges from an internal historically evolved Puerto Ricanness, which distinguishes them from Dominicanos, Cubanos, other Spanish-speaking or English-speaking Caribbean. So we're seeing these intersections that I think then the question for us is, how do we take advantage of talking about the colonial reality of Puerto Rico in the domestic politics of the United States and in the international arena, not just vis-a-vis Palestine, but also particularly vis-a-vis Latin America and the Caribbean, where we see Machado talking about embarrassment of the Nobel Prize just no longer has any validity none whatsoever. And here she is embracing Netanyahu, literally embracing Netanyahu. And Mossad is all over Latin America. That's another issue. So here's an opportunity for us to look at Puerto Rico and its internal contradiction as a colony, but also its connection to regional and global politics.
We just did a show on the absurdity of Maria Corina Machado getting the Nobel Prize, considering her dark legacy of supporting right-wing violence in Venezuela. So I'm going to take this moment right now to remind the audience that WPFW and the Latino Media Collective are in the middle of its fall pledge drive at this time, which is why we encourage everyone to go to WPFWFM.org to make a donation. You can also call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. And if you have the Cash App on your phone, make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. Because in a conversation like this that we're having with Alberto Medina and James Early, even though the Puerto Rican diaspora is one of the largest, most important, and I would say most influential diasporas here in the United States for generations, the conversation of statehood versus independence is almost impossible to find in the CNNs and MSNBCs and ABCs and CBSs of the world. Now, if we were to have this conversation in corporate media, not only would it raise awareness with regards to the issue of Puerto Rico when it comes to statehood versus independence, it would also raise awareness to the general public about the reality that the U.S. is a colonizing country. Not only just Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam, so on and so forth. So the issue of statehood versus independence when it comes to Puerto Rico is not an issue that corporate media cannot discuss, but rather that they refuse to discuss. Because if, say, for example, Puerto Rico was an independent country, would they allow a U.S. military base to set up as they are right now with regards to everything that's going on in Venezuela? Probably not. Not probably not. I would say absolutely not, just to be more clear, which is why we enjoy having these conversations on the air to pick up the slack where corporate media refuses to pick up. So once again, go to WPFWFM.org to make a donation if you want to continue to hear fantastic conversations and guests like Alberto and James. You can also call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. And if you have the Cash App on your phone, make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. So James, around this time last year, then-candidate Trump held a rally at Madison Square Garden in New York City that was rightfully criticized basically as a hate rally. 6 hours of just hating on everyone you could think of. And among the lowlights included Puerto Rico being referred to as an island of garbage. Then Democratic candidate Kamala Harris was referred to as the Antichrist, that sort of thing, so on and so forth. However, back in 1974, Madison Square Garden was the center of Black and Puerto Rican unity in a display of solidarity in defiance, which included Angela Davis. And as a matter of fact, here's a clip of Angela Davis speaking for Puerto Rican solidarity in 1974. So let's take a listen.
Compañeros y compañeros. Magnificent demonstration cannot be congratulated too many times. This is a truly historic meeting in solidarity with the struggle for Puerto Rican independence. But you see, we cannot be satisfied with this meeting alone. We have to talk about making a commitment, every single one of us, to transform these 20,000 sisters and brothers who are here today into a movement of millions of people, millions, millions. And I came here also on behalf of the National Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. And we reaffirm our commitment to deepen the awareness of the necessity to fight for Puerto Rican independence. And you see, we have to understand that when we raise the cry for the independence of Puerto Rico, it is not out of charity, or it is not a question of abstract justice. It's a question of struggling for our own freedom. The freedom of Puerto Rico is the first condition for our freedom, for all of our freedoms, black people, Asians, Indians, Chicanos, and all working people, whatever their color might be.
That was Angela Davis speaking at the Puerto Rican Solidarity Rally in Madison Square Garden in 1974. And these are the sort of moments in American history that you could also find in the Pacifica Radio Archives that the Pacifica Network has preserved all these years. And it's only possible with the support of the general public if you make a donation at this time. So again, we are in the middle of WPFW's Fall Pledge Drive, so we encourage everyone to support the Latino Media Collective at this time by going to WPFWFM.org to make a donation. You can also call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. And if you have the Cash App on your phone, make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. So we just heard the clip there, James. I want to get your thoughts, if you could expand on what Angela Davis said. And Alberto, if you want to expand on it afterwards, feel free to do so.
Well, this is one of the most commented rallies in recent history of solidarity. In 1974, I think I was still chairing the Puerto Rico Solidarity Committee here in Washington on two different occasions. There are a lot of underlying factors here. Angela Davis was unquestionably the most renowned communist in the public space. I want to underscore public space, not someone on the margin, an extraordinary intellectual, well-trained, who had drawn the attention and the ire of people across racial and class lines, both here in the United States, and was recognized around the world. And I point out both ideological sides of this, right and left, because she was a validating voice. She was a voice that people paid attention to, whether they were liberals, progressive, leftists, or right wingers. And so that I think there are some parallels here looking at the Palestinian movement. When you look at someone like Mandani, an Ugandan-born Indian Muslim, Kwame Mandani is his name, with a traditional African name, and where you've got something like 61 or 62% of Jewish Americans in those districts voting for him. I would suspect many of them would be described, from my description, would be soft Zionists, but they're voting for him to say that we want to be different kinds of human beings. We do not want to be a part of a colonial, genocidal, ethnic cleansing project. I think the parallel here with Angela Davis in 1974 and Awusa Sadakia, who was also a Black nationalist at that time coming out of North Carolina, who spoke at that forum, Juan Mari Bras, head of the Puerto Rican Socialist Party, probably also spoke at that forum, is that a parallel to be drawn here is that with Puerto Rico, when you look at the social indices, misogyny, the practice against Puerto Rican women now dating back almost a half a century, preventing pregnancies illegally, immorally, when you look at the lack of clean water or functioning electrical grid, I think here are bases that other people can relate to say that that's not the kind of society I want to live in, and it's not the kind of society that I want to have a negative effect on. I would like to see a different kind of humanity. So I think it sets that context. The last one I would make here is during that period, the Puerto Rican Socialist Party, this is a period of the development of many ABC alphabet sort of left-wing groups and the new communist movement, a seven-year period or so. Look at the book by Max Elbaum, Revolution in the Air. The Puerto Rican Socialist Party had a huge impact across the nation in places like Chicago and Boston, all our way out to California, and a new generation, many of educated, young educated people from people of color, as many as well whites, who were emerging to look at the issues of racism, misogyny. The gay movement had not developed as dramatically in democratic strides as it has now emerged to be. But Puerto Rico was right at the center of that discussion. This is a period in which Juan Manuel Ibarra could enter the halls of Congress with Rafael Anglada. Rafael Anglada is a lawyer in Puerto Rico still living, who was the right-hand assistant to Juan Manuel Ibarra, and sit down with Congressman Dellums to talk about the independence of Puerto Rico. Or I could enter the halls of Congress with the late Arthur Canoy, one of the founders of the Center for Constitutional Right, and testify, I think it was the Interior Committee under which the Commonwealth came at that time, on two different occasions. So hearkening back to that moment, not just as memories, but hearkening back to that moment to see how the issue of the independence of Puerto Rico, the colonial status of Puerto Rico, had entered at least into the margins of the public space. It was not just an abstract, romanticized Puerto Rican nationalist dream. It was actually penetrating realpolitik, the practical elements, and where you had people like Congressman Dellums and others who would invite a Puerto Rican socialist into his office to sit down to say, what can we do to address this colonial situation? Now, times have changed, but the context of realpolitik, that is the fact that the egregious situation between the U.S. government and Puerto Rico and the inhumanity that we see in Puerto Rico and the use of Puerto Rico for the threatening end to Caribbean and Latin America now is a new material basis to draw people's attention as they go to the polls, that this is not just voting for a local congressional person. This is voting for someone who has to relate to what's going on in Palestine, who has to relate to what's going on in Puerto Rico. Because in many ways, Puerto Rico becomes a linchpin from the vantage point of military threat of the U.S. across the Caribbean and across all of Latin America. While there are eight or nine military bases in Colombia, Colombia is not a U.S. colony. Puerto Rico is a direct colony. And so this raises the issue that we must be thinking as we go to the battlefront of the electoral arena to think about Puerto Rico is very much a part of the domestic politics and the responsibility of collaborating with the independence movement in Puerto Rico. The final thing I would say on this right now is that I was so pleased to hear that you had intersections with members of Congress, because so many young people, so many older people say it's no use to go to Congress. But this is where the legislative mechanism has to be undone, where the constructs of colonialism are set up to be executed. That is one of the fronts of engagement in the electoral arena, that the legislative arena is another one that we need to be ever present. And of course, in the media arena, as we're doing now, and here I will put in my own plug for support of WPFW, because it's not just a radio station. It is a community-based institution, a multi-logical institution where people from different vantage points, literally different languages, are able to build not just their ears into a listening audience, but they're actually able to come on with their voices. They're on the board, their community-based boards. So it is an institution that an information and dissemination and analysis and public education institution that WPFW represents. So I would urge the listening audience, send in whatever donations you can and keep this alive, because we need it so desperately in these times in which media is being more monopolized. And now lies have become the basic currency of Fox News, and the exclusion of wide news of MSNBC. You won't hear them talking about Puerto Rican independence on MSNBC.
Not at all. Not at all. Not only that, but I'm going to call an audible right now and skip our regular music break, because we are in the middle of a fantastic conversation here on the Latino Media Collective and on WPFW. So before I let Alberto opine on what we heard from Angela Davis, we are speaking with Alberto Medina, who is the president of Boricuas Unidos en la Diaspora. He also has a Substack entitled Free Puerto Rico. We're also speaking with James Early, who's a former Smithsonian Institution Assistant Secretary for Education and Public Service. So again, you're listening to the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in occupied Washington, and we are in the middle of WPFW's Fall Place Drive. So once again, go to WPFWFM.org to make a donation. You can also call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. 9739. So I have another clip that I'll play afterwards, but Alberto, I want to get your thoughts on the words of Angela Davis here.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, more than thoughts, I have goosebumps. I've listened to a little bit of that before, but I think, you know, the power in those words are evident every time you hear it. My other thought is frankly that, you know, it's a shame that we have to go back to 1974 to think about a moment like this, right? A moment of such deep, you know, solidarity and activism around Puerto Rican independence specifically. I mean, there have been other moments of solidarity that are kind of separate but related, like as in the fight for Vieques, you know, when you did have a lot of other folks in the United States that, you know, literally went down to Vieques, yeah, and participated in civil disobedience and got arrested. So I don't want to, you know, make the claim that it's been 50 years since there's been any solidarity with Puerto Rico, but at least in terms of this explicit call for independence, which you heard from Angela Davis, I think it's telling, and it's a shame, and it's something that we need to rescue, you know, so that we don't have to go another 50 years without that kind of rally, right? Right. Or whatever that's going to look like in 2025, because it may not look like a rally at Madison Square Garden. You know, it's different times. We have different tools. We have to use those tools of activism in the 21st century. And the last point I'd make, because it's something that, you know, I've been talking about a lot and with colleagues, and actually a good friend of mine, Professor Genaro Abraham at Gonzaga University, I recently heard deliver a lecture on, you know, you heard Angela Davis say, this isn't just about Puerto Rico, it's about us. And I think, you know, a lot of that is what James was talking about. A lot of that is this concept, which thinkers like Aimé Césaire and Foucault and Hannah Arendt have talked about, of the imperial boomerang. Of, you know, empires try this stuff first in their colonies.
Right. Yes.
And then it comes home. It comes home because they've seen how successful it is, right? And because they've sort of gotten their practice in their colonies, but also because it sort of degrades the morality and the politics of the, you know, so-called imperial core, right? Or la metrópolis, as we would say. And it, you know, I think we see with a lot of what we see happening in the United States right now, where there's sometimes a sense of, how did we get to this place? How did we get to this place where it was okay to dehumanize people? You know, where it was okay to deny people their rights, where it was okay to, you know, pick people up off the streets and throw them into black vans. Well, because the United States has been doing it in its colonies, you know, and in Puerto Rico for more than a century. So it's not that the United States just got to this place now. It's just that it was happening in places where most Americans weren't paying attention. So, you know, that's, I think, a real power of what Angela Davis was saying there. And, you know, frankly, a real example for progressives, for leftists even, who can sometimes still be a little bit confused about the issue of Puerto Rico status and find themselves advocating for statehood. And here you see, I think, the great distinction between someone like Angela Davis and Richie Torres, and the great way in which an issue like, you know, Israel and Palestine and the fight of the Palestinian people becomes a lesson and perhaps a shortcut to understanding what the right position to take is. Few people would say, well, the right way to do justice for Palestinians is for Palestine to become an Israeli province, right? Well, that's statehood. That's what, you know, not statehood as it's used in the Palestinian context, which is nation statehood, but annexation, right? Few people who want, you know, justice for Palestine would argue for its annexation into Israel. So hopefully that is a hint that if you want justice for Puerto Rico, we shouldn't be arguing for its annexation. We should be arguing for its liberation. So be more like Angela Davis and less like Richie Torres is what I would say.
Yeah, exactly. What we heard, what we just heard was a far cry from what we heard from Richie Torres. So I have another clip from the 1974 Puerto Rican Solidarity Rally at Madison Square Garden. This time it's from Owusu Sadakai, from the African Liberation Support Committee during this time period. So let's take a listen.
The People's Republic of China, in summing up their impression of the world situation, stated that countries want independence, nations want liberation, and the people want revolution. This is the irresistible trend of history. These words ring strong and beautiful in the ears of oppressed people throughout the world. And these words do indeed summarize the reasons why we are here today. We are here to show our solidarity with that initiative, We are here as a concrete expression of our will to struggle against the barriers that divide our peoples and our struggles. We are here to say to the ruling class that we no longer will allow racism and national chauvinism to divide us. We come as black people, not as liberals tailing behind the motion of the Puerto Rican people. Rather, we come as fellow revolutionaries and comrades in struggle. We place H-Rap Brown, Jim Grant, Joanne Chesimar, and countless others alongside of Lolita LeBron, Oscar Goyazo, Rafael Miranda, Irvin Flores, and Andres Cordero. We place the Orangeburg Massacre and the murder of the students at Jackson State alongside the Bonsai Massacre. We place George Jackson alongside Griselio Torrezola. It is clear that our solidarity with the Puerto Rican people is sealed in our blood, is sealed in our continuing contribution to the struggle against imperialism and all of its manifestations. We firmly support the demand for the unconditional independence of Puerto Rico. We support the right of the Puerto Rican people to determine their own destiny. Countries want independence, nations want liberation, and the people want revolution. Long live the struggle of the Puerto Rican people. Independence for Puerto Rico. Viva Puerto Rico. Venceremos.
That was another clip from the Madison Square Garden rally for Puerto Rican solidarity back in 1974. And like I said earlier, these clips can be found in the Pacifica Radio Archives, which lends itself to the importance of supporting independent media outlets like WPFW at this time, because when journalism is done correctly, it is a form of education. And so to continue to expand upon this form of education, to continue to support what it continues to be a populist medium, which is the public airwaves, whether it be television or radio, we need your support. We need the public support for the public airwaves. So again, go to WPFWFM.org to make a donation. You can also call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. And if you have the Cash App on your phone, make a donation to $WPFW. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. Alberto, this time I want to get your response to what we just heard and how such, I would say, forms of media preservation lends itself to the importance of independent media as it pertains to the issue of Puerto Rican independence.
Certainly. And, you know, I think, again, like that goosebump inspiring speech. And what was going through my mind as I listened to it just now, I was actually connecting it to what James was saying earlier. And perhaps it sounds like a contradiction, but I would argue it's not. You know, you heard very revolutionary language there, very fiery language, you know, and I think that spirit that we need to still listen to and rescue, and that is often only found in these archives, right? Because there's not a lot of people who speak like that anymore. You know, I think we need that energy ideologically at the heart of our movements, but we also need to, as I said, you know, bring this into the political tools of the 21st century. So I don't see a contradiction between, you know, that revolutionary feeling and going to Congress to, you know, sit down with the folks in power to advocate for legislation. And I say that because I think there's still a lot of folks, you know, on our ideological side who do see a contradiction and who see it as some kind of, you know, betrayal of revolution to sit at the table. But, you know, the reality is that most of us are not asking anybody to pick up a rifle and stand a post. And I at least am glad that that's not what we have to ask of people to, you know, to pursue political change and even to pursue, you know, liberation in the case of Puerto Rico. So what I think I'm going to be, you know, thinking about even more as I probably replay that, go into the archives myself and replay that clip, is how do we continue to combine those two things? How do we take that energy and that ideological foundation for liberation, for something that is revolutionary? Because freeing a nation from colonialism, you know, from 127 years of U.S. colonialism and 400 years of Spanish colonialism before that is a revolutionary idea. But how do we do that with the, you know, the political tools and the political attitudes of the modern day that I think, you know, we can really get people to engage in? And you know, I started saying at the beginning, a big part of why my organization exists, why we do our events, is because of that lack of information, because people cannot take action on something that they don't know about, don't read about, don't hear about. So that's the power and the necessity of independent media, whether it's this show, whether it's, you know, outfits like the Center for Investigative Journalism in Puerto Rico.
Yes.
It's telling the stories and hearing the voices that you're not going to get anywhere else. So I see that as one of the tools that we can have in our toolbox, but that we frankly need a lot more of, so that we can do that work of translating the fiery revolutionary energy into, you know, the political action and political movements that will work in 2025.
And I'll just say that the two clips that we played is a far cry from what we heard from Richie Torres in the first half of the conversation, which speaks volumes to sort of the moral bankruptcy of people like Richie Torres. The only thing I would say in fairness to Richie Torres is that he's not alone. There are other Puerto Rican lawmakers who are guilty of this whitewashing of the genocide that we see in Gaza. James, real quickly, we only have 1 minute left. I'll give you the last word here.
I remember Howard Fuller. I'm almost 79. This was a period of my youth. Howard Fuller was probably 3-4 years older than I am, maybe 6 years older than me. Howard Fuller became a Worcester Sadaki. When I draw from that are some critical reflections. When 20,000 people came together, that showed that something was happening that was moving into the broader public space, not just on the left. But we've got to speak to more than the left. I'm excited about the revolutionary dialogue. Joanne Chesimard is mentioned there. Joanne Chesimard, who is Asata Shakur, just died in Cuba a few weeks ago. She's mentioned in his speech. How do we take that fervor beyond ourselves, the tried and the true, who understand the issues of colonialism, who understand that it is a revolutionary question, into people who are not there, but who don't want to be a part of oppressing another group of people? As again, we've seen, I think, with the Mandani factor, which is not so much that he's a democratic socialist. What is his policy campaign, his governance campaign? So how do we move people around the governance issue, of which colonialism is one form of external governance, to take that revolutionary fervor, to go beyond those of us who are convinced, to those who don't know, those who would be empathetic, those who would be sympathetic, those who could understand that what freedom is and the need to support the independence of Puerto Rico, not because it's a revolutionary question, because it's a deep humanistic question. Is one group of people should not be oppressing and exploiting another and demeaning them in the way that we have seen MAGA and Donald Trump in recent times. But the whole duopoly, Democrats and Republicans, have controlled Puerto Rico as a colony. That's what I think we can draw from that moment and take this broader. Make Puerto Rico a Gaza kind of discussion into the broader public, not only of the United States, but literally of our hemisphere, because it is, as long as Puerto Rico, and there are a few other colonies we can't get into tonight, the French colonies, ABC Islands, yes, and the like, that we should be talking about as well.
Absolutely. And with that said, we've had another fantastic conversation. See, I knew this was going to be very enlightening to have you two back on the show again. So with that said, we've been speaking with Alberto Medina, who is the president of Boricuas Unidos en la Diaspora. His article in Substack that we mentioned earlier is entitled Richie Torres and the Rotten Idea at the Core of Zionism and Puerto Rican Statehood. And so we're going to create a link to this article so people can learn more about this. But in the meantime, Alberto Medina, as always, it's been insightful and fun. Thank you very much for being on the show with us again.
My pleasure. Hope to be back.
Absolutely. And also, we've been speaking with James Early, who's a former Smithsonian Institution Assistant Secretary for Education and Public Service. As always, it's an honor and a pleasure. Thank you very much, James, for being on the show with us.
Que viva Puerto Rico libre.
Que viva.
Claro que sí. Claro que sí. And with that said, that is it for today's show. Once again, we are in the middle of WPFW's Fall Pledge Drive. So once again, call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. You can also go to WPFWFM.org to make a donation. And if you have the Cash App on your phone, make a donation to $WPFWFM. And please give credit to the Latino Media Collective when you do so. With that said, we want to thank everyone for listening and supporting this show during the Pledge Drive. That is it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.
Ciao.
Support for WPFW comes in part from Friends of the Congo, a 501c3 entity that will be hosting Love Sound, an evening of soul sisters in support of WPFW and Friends of the Congo's DRC Women, Peace, and Security Center in Kinshasa. This event will be Sunday, November 2nd from 5 to 8 p.m. at Westminster Presbyterian Church, 400 I Street, Southwest. Performers include Navasha Dea, Liani Mataka, Janelle Gill, Sweet Honey in the Rock, and more. More information on this event is available at WPFWFM.org.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Friday, October 24th. Here are some headlines. New York Attorney General Letitia James entered a plea of not guilty in a federal mortgage fraud case this morning. The indictment claims she allegedly falsified bank statements to receive more favorable loan terms on a second home. Prosecutors allege that James misled a bank about a purchase of a second home. Meanwhile, new reporting has emerged that even if she did that, she only got a financial benefit of about $800 in the year she purchased the home. James has long been a target as Trump seeks retribution against his so-called enemies. This after she brought a civil fraud suit against Trump and his company, alleging they were inflating his net worth to secure better business deals. The case was thrown out. In more news, President Trump has ceased tariff negotiations with Canada after an anti-tariff ad aired in Ontario using Ronald Reagan's voice. WPFW's Noah Portner has this report.
President Trump and the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation have accused the government of Ontario of misrepresenting Reagan's stance. Indeed, the audio of Reagan is taken from a 1987 radio address where the former president discusses tariffs on Japan. It seems the speech included many pros and cons for tariffs, and the Canadians took specific sentences and spliced them together for effect. Still, while Reagan used selective tariffs to protect certain U.S. industries, such as steel and cars, on the whole, he believed in global free trade. Free trade was a cornerstone of Ronald Reagan's policy, and with Trump's current tariffs higher than any year since the 1930s, it's hard not to see the increased tariffs as a departure from so-called Reaganomics. Several courts have ruled that Trump overreached his authority by unilaterally declaring so many tariffs, but this debate will be settled in the Supreme Court come November 5th, when arguments will first be presented. From WPFW and WBAI, I'm Noah Portner.
And in more news, in Washington, D.C., as people find creative ways to push back against the deployment of troops, one man was arrested for harassment. Here again is WPFW's Noah Portner.
A D.C. man named Sam O'Hara is suing D.C. and a specific Ohio National Guardsman after he was handcuffed and detained after simply playing a song. O'Hara was deliberately trolling a group of guardsmen by following them around and playing the Imperial March from Star Wars, which represents the imperialist power of the Galactic Empire. For those of you who don't know, the Galactic Empire is a fictional political entity which mashes together aspects of different powerful real-world